The Red Lamp District, Episode 13, Father of the Bride by Vampire Weekend, Part 1. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Lamp District. I think this is Episode 13. It's been a while since we recorded.
It's been a while.
What are you bringing a Nickelback? Is that what that is?
That's like our thing we do every now and then. Just bringing it back.
Oh, okay. We're bringing back the Nickelback. All right.
Yeah.
I think that's what that is. I don't even know.
Something like that.
But we're not talking about Nickelback today. Oh, no.
No.
We are talking about another band and an album by another band specifically. We're talking about Vampire Weekend and their collaboration with Steve Martin, Father of the Bride.
Which they could have. He's a musician, like, pretty good.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah.
And funny. So, well-rounded, kind of.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Gosh, you know, Steve Martin, he's just kind of, like, disappeared from the cultural radar, especially in terms of movies and stuff. You know, he used to be every couple of years, there was, like, a Steve Martin movie that came
out.
Was, you know, the comedy hit of the year, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep, Father of the Bride being one of them.
I guess at some point you're just kind of like, yeah, had a good career. I'm just going to take it easy, kind of coast.
I'm going to just hang at the beach.
That's right.
play in his band.
Make banjo albums.
Yeah.
So
what a man. Best Steve Martin movie for you?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough one. There's so many good ones. I would probably, just off the top of my head, I would probably either go with, I'd probably either go old school and say The Jerk.
Man, that's what I was thinking.
Or I'd say Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Ooh, even better. Man.
But as soon as I say Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, I'm like, but what about Roxanne? You know?
Right, good movie.
I mean, many good ones.
Yeah. Pink Panther, wasn't he in that? No.
He probably was.
Maybe not.
I don't remember if I think he was. Or at least one of them or two of them or something like that. But
wow, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Dang it. Right?
That's awesome.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah.
What a
movie.
And
The Jerk. The Jerk's amazing.
Yeah, they're all great. So, gosh, that just makes me want to do like a Steve Martin movie marathon. I feel like my kids, too, need to watch more Steve Martin.
Was he in any Christmas movies? I don't think he was.
Oh, he's got to have been. I mean, you just have to think about it for a little while, and one will come to mind. Hmm. One or two will come to mind. Hmm. But yeah, Steve Martin. What a guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so let's talk about Vampire Weekend's Father of the Bride.
Yeah.
So we've been, you know, we spent a bunch of I know what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, wait a minute, these guys spent like six episodes talking about an encyclical by Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI, and now they're going to talk about a record that came out this year by Vampire Weekend.
Here we are.
What's even going on with that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me tell you, dear listener. So this album, I would say, is the weirdly Christian album of 2019. All right. Now, we're going to get into what I mean by all of that. But you're probably thinking, see, everybody's been talking about Kanye West, Jesus is King, his album that came out, and you know, we might talk about that at some point in the future, but
we have talked about it a little bit.
Well, you and I have talked about it. We talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, everybody's talking about it right now, and it's kind of like blah 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 blah, and everybody's just reacting and knee jerk and all that kind of stuff, and that's what happens in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not about that. I'm about, like, you know, we'll come back to it when the culture's had a little more time to marinate with that.
Yeah, we like to marinate, to stew.
Yeah, you know, we like to think a little more deeply about things, and
we are the Red Lamp District.
Because we are, and we're deeper than you are. So we think more deeply, we feel more deeply, and pretty much we're just better people than you. So that's why we do a podcast, so that we can, like, because you need us. So I wonder how many people are going to know that that's sarcasm, and how many people are just going to be like, I hate you guys, you know, jerks. So anyway, what was I talking about? Oh yeah, Father of the Bride. This is the weirdly Christian album of 2019, and we're going to talk about why that is. And Chris, this was, like I said, I've been saying we need to talk about this record, and I want to talk, like, this is something I want to do regularly on this podcast, is, you know, talk about not just theological works that are kind of like things that Catholics probably talk about. But I also want to talk about cultural artifacts that may have nothing on the surface to do with the church or even Christianity. But when you scratch a little, you're like, oh, right on. Because the reason? Because Jesus is king, and he's also the Logos.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we believe. And so if he is the Logos, then he's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And many times he's hidden. But really clever people, even if they aren't Christian, right, can find him, right? And be like, and they deal with him and they wrestle with him, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, this is something I want to do more regularly, and we're going to have fun doing it. And today, the first time we're doing this, we're going to talk about Father of the Bride, Vampire Weekend's fourth album that came out this year. So let me give you all a little background on Vampire Weekend.
All right.
Brief background. All right. So Vampire Weekend is this band featuring four guys. Started out in New York City. I'm mainly going to be referring to Ezra Koenig, because he's the main songwriter. He's the voice you hear on all the songs, guitar player. And he's no disrespect to the other members, but it's kind of his project. If you lost Ezra Koenig, I don't think you'd have Vampire Weekend anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you could arguably lose the other members and you'd still have the band. And I don't think that's offensive to any of them, but you know, it's his project, right? It's his project. He writes all the songs. And I think it's just conceptually, you know, his work. So we're gonna be talking about good old Ezra a lot. So I first heard of this band right around 2007, 2008. Interestingly, the very first thing I ever heard from them was what is now I view as a very uncharacteristic cover of a Radiohead song called "Exit Music for a Film," which is like the most complete, like opposite type of song that you'd expect from a band that sounds like Vampire Weekend. So they covered this song on a compilation, and I was like, that's a really weird name, Vampire Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to the cover and I was kind of like, all right, that's whatever. I guess it's kind of neat. It's kind of a different take on this song. But then shortly thereafter, their debut album came out. Vampire Weekend's debut album came out. And it was really good. Like, it was... You know, I like to think about bands that put out where their first album is like really good. There's a lot of bands like this. REM is one that springs to mind immediately for me. Like their first album, Murmur, really good. You know, there's a lot of bands you can talk about where they're very some bands start out in their first album not so good, right? They're still kind of getting formed, still finding out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Vampire Weekend is one of those bands where their first album is, I mean, it's arguably a masterpiece of a kind, right? It's not a conceptual masterpiece, maybe. It's not like, you know, going to make you think deep thoughts, but it's just the songwriting is really good. It's super catchy. It shows its own, like, aesthetic, and the lyrics are memorable, all kinds of great sounds. I mean, first album in there, like, I think they were on SNL. Right. You know, I mean, that's pretty good first step. Now, of course, they're from New York, so that probably helps. They probably had some connections there. But
yeah,
anyway, it was a really good record. Been one of my favorite records since it came out. But, you know, so I've been kind of following this band from the very beginning, you know, since around about 2008. Their second album came out a few years later. It's called Contra. It was pretty good. It was not as good as their first album. It was a little bit meh for me. It was kind of like, okay, I guess you're just, you know, I didn't really see like the progress that you sometimes see in bands that you like to see as they grow up.
Yeah.
Now, you know, maybe you could argue that maybe going back, you'd find more in that, but you know, for me, not so much. But it was really album number three called Modern Vampires of the City that came out around, I think it was like, I want to say 2013, where you're just kind of like, whoa, this is like the big conceptual leap forward. When you first hear it, you're kind of like, okay, like maybe they're going too far, like away from their roots, from where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those records where I think it intentionally kind of makes you uncomfortable and separates you so that you can start to, because they were thinking outside the box of what they could be, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're not just this band that plays like catchy kind of, you know, happy punk, ska, Paul, like heavily Paul Simon influenced music. Maybe they could be even more than that. In the same way that somebody like Paul Simon, like, you know, made an album like Graceland, you know, where it's just like, it's super, super catchy, but it incorporates all kind of world music influences, and it deals with like, it starts to deal in a really interesting way with pretty deep topics.
Yeah.
Right. That's what Modern Vampires of the City was. So it was where they made their big leap forward. And that's really what any band has to do, I think, in order to guarantee its longevity, right? You have to somehow keep it fresh and keep pushing yourself forward musically, conceptually, all these kinds of things. And the thing with this album, the thing that really hooked me, you know, as I got more and more into it, is I realized it was an album where Ezra is dealing with his Jewish roots, right? He's dealing, and I don't know, I won't claim to know a whole bunch about Ezra's faith, other than what we can just kind of discern from the music. But my understanding is that he is Jewish. I don't know if he's what kind of Jew he consider himself in terms of, you know, secular, Orthodox, conservative, mm-hmm. Reform, any of that. I'm not well versed in any of that stuff anyway, but the thing that really, you know, you can just see it all throughout the record, right? Modern Vampire City, there's just all these indicators that, you know, he's dealing, it's just an overriding theme that he's dealing with his Jewish roots, right? And what Judaism is. So
now we're talking about album number three right now.
We're talking about album number three. So arguably it would be much harder for me to make the claim that album number four, Father of the Bride, is the weirdly Christian album of 2019. If album number three hadn't come before it, right? So you need to go and listen to Modern Vampires of the City, and you know, as you listen to maybe along with or before you listen to Father of the Bride, if you haven't already. And really, I will just say that the centerpiece of album number three, Modern Vampires of the City, is the song Yahweh, right? So I'm gonna play a little snippet of this for us.
So I could never love you in spite of everything. In the dark of this place, there's the glow of your face, there's the dust on the screen of this broken machine, and I can't help but feel that I made some mistake, but I let it go.
So that is a little snippet of Yahweh from Modern Vampires of the City. And that's the album. That's the song where he basically just comes right out and is clear that like, this is an album about Yahweh, right? This is an album about the God of the Hebrews, the God of the Jews. And, you know, I mean, you can just see it clearly in the lyrics of that song.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. In the dark of this place, there's the glow of your face. There's the dust on the screen of this broken machine. And this is where the clincher, through the fire and through the flames, you won't even say your name, through only I am that I am, but who could ever live that way? And then it's ut Deo, which is what he says there, which is, I think that's Latin for to God or unto God.
Yeah, unto God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is the kind of clever songwriting that really draws you into the world of Vampire Weekend. And this song to me, Yahe, is where he goes from the songwriting of Vampire Weekend goes from like clever, really catchy, but like catchy that'll make you think kind of songwriting.
Yeah.
And he takes it to a whole new level in terms of the themes, just existentially, like wrestling with who is God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking to him in a direct way like this, you know, it's like, wow. That's really the stage setter for me. You want to say something?
No, man, I just wanted to kind of wade into those lyrics a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, so we're here, I mean, it's focused on the revelation of the name of God, which is paradoxically like the withholding of a name.
Yes. So
that's, you know, the revelation through the fire and through the flame of the burning bush to Moses, right? When God reveals himself,
exactly.
But he's revealing to Moses, calling mm-hmm. to lead Israel out of slavery into the promised land.
Right. Yeah.
So who's he addressing there? Oh, sweet thing. I mean, it seems like, is he addressing God? Because in the second stanza there, the motherland doesn't love you, the fatherland doesn't love you, so why love anything? Oh, good God. I mean, is he addressing God there? It's hard. I mean, who knows? But
yeah. I mean, I think he is. I think he's kind of, he tends to be, I don't think we want to read the lyrics like too, too straight, like in terms of like get all technical with the, you know, in terms of the reading of them. I think, you know, he's a songwriter. So on one hand, he's going for interesting, insightful with his lyrics. On the other hand, they have to kind of work with the music, and there's a playfulness to any, like there should be playfulness to any like songwriter's craft.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, but yeah.
Yeah. So I think the song is all addressed to Yahweh, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but all this is to say, like, you know, we may come back and look at this whole album eventually. I just wanted to kind of set the stage and say, you know, this is clear indication that he does not shy away from dealing with explicitly religious topics, and in his songwriting. And so that sets the stage for Father of the Bride. So I'm going to, let's shift our focus to Father of the Bride. And this album came out earlier this year, 2019. And play a little bit of the first one here. First, Hold You Now.
I know the reason why you think you gotta leave. Promises of future glory don't make a case for me. I did my best and all the rest is hidden by the clouds. I can't carry you forever, but I can hold you now. Leaving now your wedding day, all calm and dressed in white. All I keep's the memory of one last crooked night. Pews are getting filled up, the organ's playing loud. I can't carry you forever, but I can hold you now.
All right.
Okay, so this album actually, you know, this song, first song on the record, Father of the Bride, called Hold You Now. Actually, the rest of the song, or a good bit of the rest of the song, is sung by a female vocalist, Danielle Heim. And the thing, I mean, this song is just like a wow moment for me when you really deal with it, because it starts off sounding really simple, like almost kind of like this is not something you typically heard from Vampire Weekend before.
Mm-hmm.
And but like, I mean, I just want to like think about these lyrics for a second. All right. I know the reason why you think you got to leave. Promises of future glory don't make a case for me. I did my best and all the rest is hidden by the clouds. I can't carry you forever, but I can hold you now. Leaving on your wedding day, all calm and dressed in white, all I'll keep's the memory of one last crooked night. The pews are getting filled up. The organ's playing loud. I can't carry you forever, but I can hold you now. Like, how much just resonance with different aspects of Christianity are mixed into those first two verses alone, right? Just allusion, like allusions, promises of future glory. I did my best, but all the rest is hidden, and all the rest is hidden by the clouds. The pews are getting filled up. The organ's playing loud. Like, this is all imagery of a wedding in one hand, but it's like, you know, what does it even mean? I did my best and all the rest is hidden by the clouds, right? You know, that, how can that not feel a little bit like, Christ's ascension, right? Like leaving, like the imagery of Christ's ascension there. But the real kicker for this is that I didn't get to play the whole thing, but that African choir sample that comes in after Ezra's done singing that first part, it's called God Utekum Lef Blong Me, right? And this is a sample that's taken from the film The Thin Red Line. Hmm. Did you ever see that movie?
Yeah.
It's like a war movie about mm-hmm. the Pacific, really like brutal, but like, you know, kind of a deep, you know, in war, like, you know, kind of deep thoughts about what's the meaning of all this, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you translate these lyrics, this is basically, this is like an old Christian,
it's a hymn.
Take my life and let it be. Right? Mm-hmm. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to thee. Take my hands and let them move at the impulse of thy love. Take my feet and let them be swift and beautiful for thee. Take my voice and let me sing always only for my King. Right? So all of this going on in the very first song of this album, right? Mm-hmm. You got the imagery of the first, those first two stanzas of the lyrics. And then you've got this little interlude, this sample from this African choir. I mean, he's not coming right out and saying it, but it's like from the very beginning, mm-hmm. he seems to be dealing with, or at least Christianity is a big part of this record,
yeah.
right? From the very, like it would seem from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. We'll get into a whole lot more evidence of that, right?
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was just thinking, you know, this kind of nuptial mysticism, which is so basic to Christian, this kind of mainstream of Christian mystical
yeah.
thought. But it's not absent from Judaism either, and Islam too. Actually, that the imagery of the nuptial embrace, sort of the consummation of a marriage, is sort of the one of the greatest metaphors that we can come up that we have in our experience that signifies, anticipates, whatever how else you would say it, the relationship of the soul to the Creator.
Yeah,
but not just the single soul, but the all of creation to the Creator. So the bridal aspect is the creaturely, and then the groom is the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
So the bridal image plus the male voice and the female voice.
Yes,
it's gorgeous stuff.
Yeah, it really is. When the female voice comes in, you know, it just makes it even more the song more gorgeous. You've got this duet, this back and forth going. Just a sample of a few of the lyrics that she sings. I know the reason why you think I ought to stay. Funny how you're telling me on my wedding day, crying in those rumpled sheets like someone's about to die. You just watch your mouth when talking about the father of the bride. But that's the real kicker, is the whole thing with the father of the bride, right? So this is the title of the album. So it would seem that there's something about this idea of the father of the bride, that being something that maybe unites the whole record, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? You know, who is the father of the bride? If we kind of take the imagery we're seeing so far, you know, the father, at least in Christian terms, the bride is the church, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the father of the bride would be God, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The father of the bride would be God. If the bridegroom is Christ, then mm-hmm. the father of the bride is God the Father.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So the one he sang about in the previous album, Yahweh.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It kind of carries forward. So, you know, that's that's where we dive in on Hold You Now. The next track and here is called Harmony Hall. Play a little sample of that.
Took a vow in summertime. Now we find ourselves in late December. I believe that New Year's Eve will be the perfect time for their great surrender. But they don't remember. Anger wants a voice, voices won't sing. Singers harmonize till they can't hear anything. Free from all that questioning, but every time a problem ends, another one begins, and the stone walls of harmony all bear witness. Anybody with a word in mind can never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't want to live like
Yeah, super, super duper catchy. I think that was the lead single from the record, and it's like, I mean, you just hear that song, and you're just like, you just kind of want to groove. You want to get down, right?
Yeah.
As the kids say these days.
Do they? Do they say that?
I hear it all the time. So, and in that exact voice. But this is and I think you see this all throughout the record. Really, this is what Vampire Weekend's good at. Really catchy, and then you look at the lyrics and you're like, wow, like, you know, it sounds happy, and then you look at like what's going on in the lyrics and you're like, maybe not so happy. But this record doesn't necessarily have the stark imagery, like maybe Christian imagery that that the first track does, but I think it still matches, you know, and it shows some real sort of existential wrestling going on. You know, this idea of Harmony Hall, right? Let's see. He says, and the stone walls of Harmony Hall bear witness. Anybody with a worried mind could never forgive the sight of wicked snakes inside a place you thought was dignified. I don't want to live like this, but I don't want to die. Right. He goes on to say, within the walls of power lies a nervous heart that beats like a young pretender's. Beneath these velvet gloves, I hide the shameful, crooked hands of a moneylender, because I still remember. Anger wants a voice. Voices want to sing. Singers harmonize till you can't hear anything. It's kind of, you know, it sounds kind of catchy, like, you know, singers harmonize till they can't hear anything. Like, but what he's dealing with there is, I think he's dealing with the rise of, you know, within U.S. society of, like, you know, increasing like polarization and hatred for people that we have difficulty identifying with, mm-hmm. right? And I think the insight there is great. Like, you know, anger wants a voice, right? Everybody, like, when you're angry about something, you want to tell somebody about it. You want to talk about it. You want to yell about it sometimes. And then voices want to sing, and then singers harmonize till they can't hear anything, right? You know, that's just an amazingly like lyrical progression and so insightful, right? Like, there's something about when we're angry that we want to band together with others. And we want our voices to like be heard, and we get so wrapped up in hearing ourselves harmonize with others that we can no longer hear anything else, right? It just becomes this big, huge noise of anger that's overwhelming. And, you know, the scary thing is that seems to be a little prophetic about where we are in American society right now on, you know, really in so many different ways. And, you know, it feels like it might boil over, but I really love the image. Like, I can't help but think, like, when I hear these words again, and this, there's not really like strong evidence in the lyrics that this is the case, but I hear the words Harmony Hall and I think of like heaven, but I also think of hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like Harmony Hall sounds like a very like, oh, it sounds like heavenly, like people singing together, but then it's like, but it could also be hell, right? It could also be this place, like he says, where we're so wrapped up in our own power. That's really a pretend power. That, like, if it's the power of this world, then it's a false power. It's a power we lose. And he says, and again, I go back to, within the walls of power lies a nervous heart that beats like a young pretender's, right? So the powerful, beneath the veneer of the powerful, there's often this sense of like, I have to hang on to it. I'm pretending, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to use violence and coercion to hang on to the power that I have, rather than receiving a different kind of power, rather than receiving a truer kind of power, which, you know, he doesn't come right out and talk about Christ there, but that's a huge part of the Christian message, right? Is that true power doesn't come through grasping power and hanging on to it. True power comes through surrender, right? It comes through surrender to the will of God.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You feeling me here, Chris?
I'm feeling you, man. Yeah. No, one thing, I mean, that's awesome stuff. One thing, just taking a step back to the sort of, and this album is so happy.
I know. Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Think about where music had been before, from like the grunge days.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles, kind of the early rock stuff, was so happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like really happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the beginning there. But, you know, in our days growing up, you know, the grunge scene and
all that.
And then the sort of angry existential stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like music's all just been there. It's been angry and like upset and like youthful. Like,
well, it's the world's not good. Is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But here with this, and you see a lot of other bands too, kind of moving this direction. But there's this really upbeat, like, I don't know, expression of like simple joy and freedom at being alive, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the contrast with the lyrics too. I mean, I don't know. What do you do with that?
I think that's the brilliance. I mean, I think sometimes it's. I mean, I enjoy my dark brooding works just as much as anybody.
Yeah.
But what I've noticed is that I really. Some of my favorite works, whether it's movies, shows, whatever, are like these sorts of works where there is a surface level, like there's a comedy to them. There's a happiness, a catchiness that really draws you in. But then like that's not all there is to it. You dig a little below the surface, and you're like, wow, he's really dealing with some heavy stuff here.
Yeah,
I'll tell you one of. My favorite movie of all time is Raising Arizona.
Yeah, whoa.
Which is one of the Coen Brothers' early movies.
Man.
And that's like a great example to me of this kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got like it's hilarious on so many levels. Like
mm-hmm.
it's so funny, and it never really gets super dark, but there's really dark undertones that they're dealing with in that movie.
You know, that's a very that's almost a Jewish genre.
Yeah.
To have that sort of hold, like, you know, the those two together,
yeah,
and not try to, I mean, just express it,
mm-hmm.
not try to like do anything more with it.
Right,
it seems like this is in a sense, I mean, Christian and Jewishness are not necessarily opposed at all.
Right,
in fact, they're intimately linked.
Absolutely, yes,
That's sort of part of the album too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's something very Jewish, traditionally Jewish about that juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. No, but you're exactly right on that insight. That's one of the things that I love about this album is on the surface, the music is so like, it sounds like, I mean, this is like, it's one of my favorite albums that came out this year, but it's also like one of my, like the favorite album of my kids, I think that like in recent memory,
wow.
Like my, you know, it's my wife is like, you know, taking our kids to different places. Like when I get in the car after they've been in the car, it's usually Father of the Bride that's in there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That they've been rocking out to. And, you know, my kids are, you know, at that age where they're starting to wake up and think more deeply about the world and all that kind of stuff. But on another level, they probably just want to listen to kind of catchy music too,
yeah,
you know, a lot.
Yeah.
So it's like this kind of hits on both levels.
Yeah.
I can't help but hear the song and think about the song Touch of Grey by Grateful Dead. There's there's actually parts of this song that sound like they're almost lifted from that song. But that's of course a song where it's like, you know, he's dealing with like Jerry Garcia is dealing with the fact that, you know, he's gonna die, right? But it has this kind of like, it's like this kind of beach, it has this kind of beach sort of feel to it, you know. The music sounds pretty happy and everything, but then you listen to the lyrics and you're like, okay, this is a little bit depressing, you know? So on one on another
right?
level.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We probably need. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, we keep talking about this. I mean.
Yeah.
There's no. It's not like it's cynical or ironic either.
Yeah.
Like this sort of attitude, it goes all the way back to like the experience of ancient Israel,
mm-hmm.
the goodness of God, but also the real suffering in the world.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that sort of those have to be held together.
Right.
You can be cynical about it. You can be, you know, I don't know. You can be a lot of different ways about it. And one of the main strands in Jewish culture has always seems to me to have been like this expression, like the Coen Brothers movie, like they're sort of joined together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what do you do?
Yeah. Yeah. Again, like that seems to be one of the themes of this album is like, you know, the surface level happiness that kind of says like the world is a beautiful place. It's a place full of joy and happiness. And Benedict talked about this in Space Alvi. He talked about like the everyday hopes, right? But mm-hmm. are those enough, right? When you really mm-hmm. dig below the surface and you start to realize there's also a lot of ugliness and evil and anger and the snakes inside of Harmony Hall, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To use Ezra's lyric here. Harmony Hall is one of the centerpieces of the record. It's a really, really cool song, pretty long. Love that. I love the little, as a guitar player, I love the little noodly riff he does there.
We're on the second song. There's 18 songs in this album.
I know we're not going to go deep into all of them.
Yeah.
I do want to say Bambina, the next one, is a little bit on the short side, but this is so wow. Like one of the lyrics here, my Christian heart cannot withstand the thundering arena. Right. I mean, again, comes right out like talking about Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, this is the first song where he actually talks directly about Christianity. My Christian heart cannot withstand the thundering arena.
Yeah.
But then even the title of the song, Bambina, that's the Italian word for for like little girl.
Yeah, baby girl.
Baby girl.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In fact, I looked this up. So a lot of times in Italian Renaissance art, they refer to the child, the infant Jesus, as Il Bambino.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So
and of course the Yankees. Well, the great Bambino.
Well, you know, that was when the Yankees, you know, were acceptable. So,
the greatest baseball player who ever lived.
Did you see Garrett Cole got his contract with the Yankees?
Did he?
It's the second highest contract of all time, I think, and highest for a pitcher. Yeah. So like a bajillion dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they just buy wins. That's what they do. They just sign a check and they get wins. They get tallies in the W column.
Yeah, we got to come back, bring it back here.
Okay,
we'll talk about this another time. Oh yes, we'll talk. But Bambina. But when I hear that, I think of, you know, especially with the other lyrics, and he's talking about apparently an Italian girl, unless he's just using this word playfully for any girl. I think of like the church, right? The church is the little Italian girl, right? In terms of like, and more specifically, the Vatican, right? That you've got it there. Sitting on the hill,
mm-hmm.
I can't help with some of these lyrics, but think of the parable of the house built upon the sand because of the first line he says, right?
Hmm.
He says, no time to discuss it, can't speak when the waves reach our house upon the dunes, right? And the Vatican, of course, sits upon hill, like, you know, hills in Rome, right? Mm-hmm. In the middle of the country of Italy. So just little indications that this one's a little more direct in terms of the lyrics that we're dealing with stuff involving Christianity. So number four is This Life, another really happy sounding song. But then you read the lyrics and it's like this life and all its suffering, right? I know pain is as natural as the rain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Baby, I know pain is as natural as the rain. I just thought it didn't rain in California. Baby, I know love isn't what I thought it was because I've never known a love like this before you. And then the chorus, you've been cheating on me. I've been cheating on you. You've been cheating me, but I've been cheating through this life and all its suffering. Mm-hmm. Oh Christ, am I good for nothing? Again, right?
Yeah.
Direct reference to Christ there.
Yep.
And just this idea of like, I mean, let me just play a little snippet of so people can hear how happy sounding this song is.
Man, if I had a few drinks, I'd be dancing around this room right now.
Yeah, you know, it's so like good. So catchy.
Yeah.
So
I just want to be like outside in the spring, like dancing around a pool.
How can that possibly be a sad song or like a song about suffering? It sounds like it's just all about fun and like joy in life. But then you read the lyrics and it's like, baby, I know pain is as natural as the rain. This is a song about suffering. Yeah, I mean, again, we have this paradox of the major key, happy sounding music, but then lyrically we're dealing with suffering and we're dealing with pain. We're dealing with, you know, it like asking Christ, am I good for nothing? Right. Yeah. You know, is my life just meaningless? Mm-hmm. Right. So
yeah, one thing about, you know, contrasts, they always emphasize both sides. So like the contrast of the existential lyrics emphasizes the happiness of the music, and then the happiness of the music emphasizes contrast with the depth of the lyrics.
Yeah, I mean,
so you couldn't.
Well, this is a song about this life, right? Like, yeah. So much of life is happiness and joy and like, you know, stuff that makes you feel good and just optimistic about life, and then so much of it is the dark side, right? Is the suffering, yeah. The pain,
yeah.
That's natural as the rain,
right? Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I got these thoughts, but we gotta keep moving, man.
Yeah, well, we got
keep on trucking.
Yeah, this is one of those records where you could just go on and on about it. It's so good. We got Big Blue. I don't know what to do with this song. I'm not going to spend too much time thinking about it. It's one little snippet. It's pretty short. I think it just maybe has to do with like the ocean or something like that. Because like Big Blue, like the water. You know, but I don't know. I'm not exactly sure how it fits into this record. If you're listening and you're a fan of this record and you have some thoughts on it, any feedback that you have as a listener, if you dig this record. You want to share that with us? We'll probably eventually because I know, you know, we're already getting millions of fans.
I know.
It was, as we gather more feedback on this record, maybe we'll do a feedback episode on it and interact with other people's thoughts on
it.
But I'm interested to know other people's thoughts on Big Blue. The next one, track six, How Long? How long is a biblical refrain?
Mm-hmm.
Psalm 13.
Yeah, very important.
Habakkuk 1:2.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see.
That's huge.
Habakkuk 1:2. This was really, I liked this when I saw this. Just reading a random, looks like the NIV here. How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save, right? So those two words, how long, have very strong biblical resonance to them. And again, we find in the lyrics reference to Christian things. Broke my heart at midnight mass. Now I'm the ghost of Christmas past. Right?
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, for those of you who don't know, midnight mass is the mass that happens on between December 24th and it's the midnight of December 24th into December 25th. So there's mass in most Catholic churches at that time. And in fact, yeah, my family typically has started going to that.
Do you go to that? Yeah.
Most years. I know it's hard for you with the youngins.
Real tough.
But
as
they get older, you know, you'll be
able
to.
Those are some of the greatest masses, like the midnight mass.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
The nativity for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then Easter. You know, they're super long, lots of symbolism, really rich. A lot of the amazing things happen at these celebrations.
I'd just love to know if this was an actual experience of Ezra's, like if he was actually like went to midnight mass at some point and had his heart broken.
Yeah.
Like,
what does it mean to be the ghost of Christmas past?
What does that mean? I'm like, Ezra, yeah. I want to talk to you about this record, Ezra. It's just like, this is so good. And I appreciate you so much.
Right in, man. Right in.
Yeah.
Ezra, we'll have you on the show.
Ezra, I have no idea how to get in touch with you, but maybe we could try to find out if he wants to be interviewed on this record. I'm sure he wants to come on this podcast.
He could come on down to Tennessee and
yeah,
we could do a little house show.
Totally.
We could open up for him.
Yeah.
He could just play with us. He could play our songs.
There you go.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Just going off the rails. All right. Unbearably White, track 7.
This isn't about you and me.
Yeah. Did you write this about us? Oh, come on. This one reminds me of the title and the talking about like the unbearable whiteness. I don't pick up any like, maybe I'm completely off base here, but I don't pick up anything about like
race.
There's no like talking about race in this. Like to me, this is like the whiteness that Herman Melville was talking about in Moby Dick.
Whoa.
Right. You've read Moby Dick, right?
Yeah, man. Of course.
So you got all the, you know, you've got like long chapters on like the blankness of the sea and the whiteness of the whale and all this kind of stuff. And what is it all about? It's all about like the reflection on eternity and the God of eternity, right? Yeah. And like how overwhelming it is to the human soul.
Yeah.
Right?
The sea.
Anybody who's ever been out in the middle of the ocean,
the sea.
It's like, oh, yeah. It's the like... Sea. It like both is beautiful and it's terrifying at the same time.
Yeah.
But I also like, I pick up notes of like the transfiguration in this. Mm. I ran up the mountain out of your sight. The snow on the peak was unbearably white.
Hmm.
Right. Christ at the transfiguration. He starts glowing with the glory. He reveals the fullness of his glory to to a handful of the apostles.
Yeah. That's where Moses saw the divine glory.
Yeah.
And he brought it back on his face.
Yeah.
Like glowing. You know,
absolutely. Shining.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you have two Old Testament and New Testament references there, right?
Yeah.
And for me, like, this was almost like a reflection, like a meditation on nature and grace, or glory.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you. You're a philosophical type. Sometimes when you think about heaven, you think about eternity, think about all those things. Like, sometimes you'll hear people being like, talk about heaven and they'll say like, well, why would I want to go to heaven and be bored forever or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a very like that is a very natural response to the idea of like living forever. If you think about living forever in terms of the here and now, in terms of things that we already know about, it seems like it can be overwhelming to the soul.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, Anything that we desire, I want to drink this coffee, I drink it, but I want another sip,
mm-hmm.
and then tomorrow I'm gonna want more coffee. And it's always like every desire is never completely fulfilled. Our desire always is more than the thing that it gets.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, the highest, you know, the things that we seek after the most. But, you know, so our desire is for the infinite.
Right.
And desire is an infinite longing. And so that points to sort of fulfillment that is also infinitely deepening.
Right.
That's the idea about, you know. Why? I mean, that's one way of thinking about why we wouldn't be, you know, get tired of. We wouldn't be saturated and like, you know, kind of get sick with God. Like,
right.
It wouldn't. Like, if I don't eat too much chocolate, I get sick.
But
it's not. That's not how it works, right?
Yep. But and all valid points. But if we conceive of eternity as an infinite amount of any good natural thing.
Right.
Then it can become overwhelming, right? It can become overwhelming to think about it in those terms because you're like, well, if I just keep drinking coffee, if I don't stop drinking coffee, like I can get to a point where I've had enough coffee.
Yeah.
I can get to a point where I've had enough chocolate. I can get to a point where I've had enough of any created thing in this world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And if that's my idea of happiness, then, you know, that it like I can, if I, once I have enough of that, I discover like, oh, that's too much.
Right, right.
Right? Yeah. And so if we think about, if that's how we're thinking about God as just another created natural thing instead of the thing that is capable of filling us, right? Is capable of keeping, of making us happy in a way that will be ultimately and continually satisfying and ecstatically satisfying, right? That's where we can understand like this. I can just identify with this whole idea of like, oh, that's unbearably white, unbearably like pure and bright and overwhelming, like to think about on a natural level.
So there's something about our desire that is ordered to the supernatural,
right?
Ordered to an infinite good,
something that we even can't even like conceive of, right?
Yeah,
like on a natural level.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, just like little hints of it.
As Christians, we just kind of have to trust, like, eye has not seen, ear has not heard, right? Like, what that this thing will actually be the fulfillment of all we search for, right? That this glory will actually be the fulfillment of all we search for and all we long for.
Yeah.
This one follows up with Rich Man. This is a song about the hubris of being set apart. hundreds of millions of souls left behind. This one really reminded me of Abraham's appeal to God in Genesis 18. It's kind of a reverse of that. You know what I'm talking about? Where he's like, would you save, would you spare this city if there were 50 righteous men in it?
Yeah, right.
He kind of plays with this like 1 in 10, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, 1 in a million, you know?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, I see
and,
what you're saying.
You know, it's like, am I, you know, I'm the one, right? I am the one in the in this equation, this 1 in a million, 1 in a billion.
Yeah.
And of course, all over the New Testament is, and especially the Gospels, is the is dealing with the difficulties, how difficult it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, right?
Yeah. So he's talking about his, like, you know, he's born into this kind of family and goes to Columbia University. He's in a band that is really successful. He's doing amazing in life.
Yeah.
And early on in the album, he's cheating on life because I guess he's sort of like getting, I mean, he's getting. You know, is that does that mean he's like not suffering like he sees everywhere else at this point? You know, and he's kind of like cheating on it. It's like it's going to catch up with him and whatever.
Well, even living in America, we can just as generally as Americans, we can feel like that, right?
Exactly.
It's like we live in a pretty darn good situation compared to the rest of the world and even like the rest of human history.
Yeah, yeah. And the idea of election in Judaism,
like, yeah,
like there's sort of this humor about it. We're the elect. We're God's like we bear God's law. Like we are the chosen people to bring God's, you know, goodness to the world. I mean, what? It's sort of like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like there's a ridiculous thing about it. It's like this sort of funny thing that God's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
How but it's also tragic and all that stuff.
How did I wind up being this one? Right. Yeah. Like to have all this responsibility, all, you know, because riches are in the, you know, in the eyes of God and the eyes of most religions are like a responsibility, right?
Totally,
they're a responsibility to do good in whatever form those riches take.
Hey man.
Do you gotta call it a day?
Should I just call in sick today and we just talk about this all day?
You tell me, man. I guess we can
Text the boss right now.
We got the habit of of splitting these into two episodes if need be or more. So
man. Yeah.
Yeah. It's up to you.
No, I mean I can't call in sick, really.
Well, yeah, I don't, you know.
I could fake a flat tire and be like, oh, I just had, can we call this like metaphorically a flat tire? Saying, well, I got a flat tire. We're just, I mean, that means to us secretly that we were just talking about Vampire Weekend for 2 hours.
I think you just text your boss and be like, hey, boss, I'm recording a podcast episode on Vampire Weekend's Father of the Bride. I got to finish it. Sorry. Flat tire in quotation marks. And by flat tire, I mean.
Like, you know, at the end of those commercials where they talk really fast?
Right. That's what I would say at the end. Terms and conditions apply.
Or we could just do two episodes.
Well,
if, I mean, what?
Probably. We can do two episodes. That's that seems to be how we roll.
This is our thing.
Yeah.
We do how we want. The people want two episodes.
Yeah, totally.
That's what the people want.
Totally. So that's probably a good stopping point. So let's just call it the end there of part one.
All right.
And we'll pick up next time talking about Married in a Gold Rush. So this album's worth spending two episodes on, people. Go listen to it. Father of the Bride by Vampire Weekend. It is outstandingly good.
Yeah, man. Enjoy.
And you just got to listen to it.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's all we got for this week,
folks.
That's
a wrap.
And we will talk at you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.